Congratulations. We always try to find sneaky ways of making the announcements, don't we? All right. Well, today is our annual congregational meeting, which is which in the past several years has consisted of simply a financial report, and we look at the income and expenses of the previous year and project a budget for the current year. And typically on these Sundays, I'll use the sermon time to address a number of items relating to the life of our church. Some people like to call this the state of the church address. And so I'd be tempted to like imitate our president and talk about all the accomplishments over the past year, that no one has ever seen anything like it, and how we are making our church great again, greater than any church in the city, greater than any church in the world. No one has ever seen anything like it. And we keep on winning and winning and winning. It's truly amazing and so on. But if I did that, I'd have to put up with a lot of heckling from the audience, and it wouldn't be worth it, not to mention that it just simply isn't true. Our objective here is not really to be great as though we are in a competition, but to be healthy. And we are pretty healthy in a number of different ways, and our future here looks quite promising, and there are some things to be pleased about, I would say even excited about. There is, of course, like many churches, a list of things we could be doing better, a list of things that we do pretty well, and a list of things that we are just more or less average on. But for this morning, instead of getting into all of that, I thought it would be more timely and helpful to give everyone some updates on a number of items the elders have been working through over the past several months, and in fact, we're still working through them. And there are some changes in the works, as you know, on several fronts. And this past Tuesday night, when I was explaining my plan for today to the elders, the guys actually thought it would be a good time to also take a few minutes to remind everyone about the philosophy that we try to promote here, often referred to as the every member ministry. We talked about it even this morning a little bit beforehand. So it's a concept that's easy to advocate for on paper, as they say. The Bible clearly teaches it, and the case is easy to make. But quite frankly, it can be a bit challenging to actually implement it in a church because we are, after all, a volunteer organization. But with some of the anticipated changes coming up this year, a call at this time for all hands on deck would be quite appropriate. So I eagerly jumped into that the very next morning, but there were just too many things I wanted to say about that and simply couldn't find a way to give it justice in this small time slot. I really need 2 weeks for that, not just like a 5-minute kind of add-on sort of thing. And so my plan at this point is to save all that for next month. The vision of an every member ministry is one we have talked about over the years. It's one that I and the elders firmly believe in, and is one Josh is committed to as well. And he's actually eager to ramp it up to the next level. And it's after looking at this, it's actually been a few years since we have talked about it. So we'll get into that the last two Sundays of April. I'll revisit the biblical case for it and then show how those principles from the Bible can be applied to our congregation. But for today, some updates would be in order. There's a few things going on that we want to share with the congregation so as to keep everyone in the loop. I'm not sure if we'll have time to get through them. If not, I'll work them in the weeks to come. The first one, and probably the main one, the one that's probably on the forefront of most people's minds, would be the passing of the baton, so to speak, from me to Josh Miles. This has been a long time coming. And when we speak of this, we need to be mindful of the warning in James. When we make plans, it would be arrogant to forge ahead without taking into account the will of God. He might, whatever it might be, have something else in mind. And so with this and everything else, we need to hold any plans we make with a light grip. It's just always a good reminder when it comes to these sorts of things. But assuming the Lord is agreeable, let me lay out a basic timeline of what we are anticipating. And this is pretty much in line with what Dave shared a couple months or so ago, with maybe a few minor revisions here. So Josh is expected to finish seminary next month and will then resume his series on 1 Peter starting the first Sunday of May. And then he has some out-of-town business to take care of in June, so he will pick that series back up the first Sunday of July and will, from that point on, probably stick to the series, finish it out without too many breaks or interruptions. Also at that time, the first Sunday of July, he will more or less begin to function as the senior pastor. The plan, as the Lord wills, is to install him officially on the first Sunday of September. So during the months of July and August, I will still be the pastor, but he will be doing most of the work. And this arrangement could be probably illustrated by something like a pilot turning over the controls to the co-pilot. I'll still be in the pilot seat if needed, but he will be the one flying the plane. And this two-month overlap period should help make the transition a bit smoother. However, there's still a few things to take care of in all of this. And so, again, things, assuming all of this will transpire, we need to have a formal interview, Josh, with the elders and the transition committee. A formal job description needs to be crafted and an opportunity for the congregation to weigh in on the affirmation form per our bylaws. But if things go as we anticipate, he will be the pastor on Sunday, September 6th. And my last day, September 5th, as it so happens, will be my 72nd birthday, which is a good day to retire from a full-time job. Now, from that point on, with the elders at his side, he will assume all the responsibilities of the role: weddings and funerals, baptisms, baby dedications, officiating the Lord's Supper, giving sermons, scheduling others for sermons, the Christmas Eve and Good Friday services, the order of the Sunday morning service, what we do here, counseling, resolving problems and complaints, handling controversies, making sure the church runs smoothly, helping everyone to get along with each other, keeping everyone happy, solving world hunger, and so on, and also running these meetings. And to what degree he is involved in every facet of each of those is yet to be seen, but he will at least be the point man, as we say, and it will not be me. My responsibilities and authority over what goes on here will be drastically changed, obviously. So on September 5th, the plan is that I will resign not just as the pastor, but also as an elder, and become a rank-and-file member of the church under the elders. Obviously, I'll be available to them for input if that's ever needed, but my hand will no longer be on the helm in any way. Now, this could be an adjustment for everyone, a big change from what we've had over the past 25 years, but not a big jolt, as we have, as you know, been preparing for this for some time, for 7 or 8 years now. And in a number of ways, that transition has already begun. For instance, I see it in the way that many here are relating to Josh, interacting with him as though he is in that role or will be soon. And it's a natural, healthy thing. It's good to see. And he is a good fit for what lies ahead here. Now, most likely, at the beginning of September, I'll assume a part-time position here, taking care of administrative needs. We've drafted up 5 pages of various behind-the-scenes tasks that require ongoing attention. It's stuff that I know how to do, for the most part, enjoy doing it, and I've been doing it for, you know, like from the beginning. But this itself would be a temporary arrangement with the goal of working myself out of that part-time job, finding others to assume those responsibilities over the course of the next couple years, perhaps even sooner. The elders, I think, are afraid that I could die before I pass on the launch codes. So I always like that expression, passing on the launch codes. So we'll be looking for folks who are willing and able to assume some of those, thus the sermons on every member ministry. So that said, there's been no firm decisions yet made about this part-time position. It all looks good on paper, but to speak candidly, I have moments when I'm a little hesitant about it, but this currently is the path that we are on. Regardless, it's quite likely that I'll continue to teach the 9-10 class and might even share a sermon once or twice a year if asked to do them. We'll see. I just actually don't really care for public speaking that much anymore, and have come to really prefer the informal setting of a smaller classroom. I really do like that a lot. Now, according to conventional wisdom, I didn't know whether to get into this or not, but probably just needs to be said. According to conventional wisdom, this arrangement that I just laid out is a bad idea. It's a bad idea for the former pastor to stay at the church, much less hold a staff position, even a part-time one. And these situations usually don't enjoy a favorable history. You know, the previous guy needs to find another church home. That's the advice. So we've had a number of discussions about all of this over the past, actually, couple of years, and we have several things going for us that could mitigate the usual problems. I could talk a lot about this, but let me just summarize three main ones. First, I am quite eager and ready to turn things over. There's none of this, I don't want to give up my job kind of thing going on. Another one is that Josh and I have a very good working relationship. There's none of this competition and suspicion and political posturing and threatening and selfish ambition, all that kind of stuff that can be pretty typical. We have a very healthy relationship. And thirdly, I know that there will be some changes. I don't want to get in the way of those, even those that I might not really care for. But I can handle this because I'm confident that those changes won't involve anything that's foundational to our church, our philosophy of ministry, our philosophy of worship, convictions on the sanctity of life and the sanctity of marriage, upholding sound hermeneutics and sound doctrine, content over gimmicks, you know, all that stuff that's been ingrained in our church for a long time and is actually established in writing in our handbooks, stuff that the elders and the Josh and the congregation, you know, we all hold these things in common. It's our bedrock, and I don't see any of that changing. And if so, I would have a hard time staying in my lane, but that's simply not going to happen. There are other reasons I believe this arrangement could work, but when it's all said and done, this really is uncharted water. It's yet to be seen. And to speak candidly, we have a small group this morning. I realize that this will largely come down to me. For 25 years, I've told people what to do. And soon I'll be on the other end of that. And it could be payback time. So your prayers would be appreciated. All right, so two significant dates. The first Sunday of July, the co-pilot takes the controls. On the first Sunday of September, the co-pilot becomes the pilot, and the pilot himself goes back to sit with the other passengers. Not in mid-flight, but yes. There's a verse in Ephesians that's about how Christ has apportioned his grace of gifts to each person to his measure. And I'm pretty sure I've never got that particular one.
That's only if he's not too tired from mowing the grass.
Yeah, like I said, I have some hesitation about a lot of this. If I can help, here's my, if I can help, we'll talk about it. Okay, so with Josh stepping into the role as the pastor, this opens up another big question. What about a youth group minister? It's been on the minds of several people. It's been a subject of some discussion. And it might be just best at this point to hear from him directly. I've also asked him, as he comes to talk about this, to share a few words about his own thoughts regarding the prospect of becoming a pastor. You've heard us talk about it. You've not yet really have heard from him, then there will be an opportunity later on this summer for him to share something more in depth about all this. But I thought at least maybe a few words today would be appropriate. So, Josh, why don't you come and talk about the youth group and also your own thoughts about what lies ahead?
All right. Well, when we were talking about doing this. / when I was preparing for this, I was focused more on the state of affairs with the youth group than I was with thoughts and reflections on transitioning with Wendell. But I can just share a little bit off the cuff there. Number one, as I've reflected already to those who have been involved with the transition group and to many of you in one-on-one conversations, This is a transition that I approach with fear and trembling, not in that I'm overly anxious about it in a fleshly sense, but that it is a burden of responsibility before the Lord that I do not take on with any sense of lightness. So, but I am also thankful to our Father in Heaven for having brought us as a church community to this point, having brought me to this point, and I trust that if our hearts are to serve and glorify Him and edify and love each other, things will be well. and we have much to look forward to. So I like how Wendell prefaced all this with a sort of a God willing statement. I think that's very true. We rely heavily on our Father's will and plan and purposes for this church community, and we're going to try and do our best to follow him every step of the way. Now, it's been especially poignant for me as I've been observing this season of youth ministry begin to mingle with a season of pastoring here at the church. And it's been had great opportunity, cause to reflect on what a blessing the youth ministry has been. We started in 2017, so we're going on, what is it? Yeah, about 9 years. And I went back and looked, I don't know when the last time was any of you were on our youth group page on our website. I think it needs some revisiting, but I remember helping to write it some 8 or 9 years ago. And while I would reword significant portions of it on this end of a decade, I will say there are three important objectives that we put on there that I think hold true regarding our youth program. And I want to impart this to you all as we look at the season change to let you know that these objectives for the youth will not change. So number one, we listed partnership with parents in the spiritual formation of their children. I think that is such a valuable principle. You know, one of my greatest joys has been coming in here and recognizing that I'm not working on my own to raise, disciple, godly children, these eternal souls who will love the Lord well in their lives, but I'm working in tandem with parents and have found over the last decade that these parents are faithful stewards of their children. I'm very thankful for this church community and the intentional way in which we have kind of joined ranks in the spiritual well-being and nourishing of these kids. So that needs to be maintained very carefully. One of my great joys, I mean, I don't know, Nava is 12 now. She was 3 when we started here, and it has been such a gift to not only be able to invest in her spiritual nourishment at home, but then to know that she's surrounded by family here at church, and then that she's in a Christian school. What a unique opportunity. As somebody who grew up in a population of some million Muslims, it's a beautiful thing and a privilege, I think, that we take for granted here, that we can raise, what's the phrase they say, raise your kid in a village? That's not the phrase. Is that the phrase? It takes a village, yes, yes. So it takes a church, but there's a lot of, just so much to be appreciated that my daughter can go from her home to her church to her school and be so immersed in those who fear God and rightly divide his word. So the second principle here was biblical training and equipping so students know and love God's word. And that can go across a full spectrum, be it apologetics or teaching and doctrine and the like, but that's a priority that will be maintained. And then third, building a community of young believers who seek to honor God and serve together. And I would say, if I was to give you an objective take on my last 10 years here, that it's been, I hope we've been able to impart and raise up a generation who honors God, but I have dropped the ball when it comes to service. I think I got the elders at the time quite excited when I spoke about, oh, we're going to have service projects, we're going to go out into the city and be sort of the arms and feet of the church. And that never really took off, primarily because of me, but also because I didn't take long in my tenure here to sort of begin dabbling in other areas of our church ministry, be it administration, be it college ministry was newly formed, and so on and so forth. And so I found my attention split away from the youth group quite a bit, not to mention the last 3 or 4 years of seminary. So, but those are the three: partnership with parents, biblical training and equipping, and building a community of young believers who seek to honor God and serve together. Now, I think those priorities hold true, and I think that they're too important to allow the youth ministry to lose momentum during this transition process. And if anything, I would love to see the youth program improve from where it's been under my leadership. And so my commitment during the transition process is to maintain a sense of continuity and stability for the youth group. I have not been a fan historically of the fruit of the youth group season before me. There was a lack, to be candid, there was a lack of stability, there was a lack of continuity, and I think it affected that generation somewhat negatively. And so my hope is that we will not subject the youth to that going forward. So continuity, stability, while we are prayerfully looking for a long-term youth minister. So I invite you guys, we may, in the coming season, we will be keeping our eyes out for a potential youth minister, be it a part-time or full-time position. We're contemplating the idea of having a youth minister come in who can also partake in church administration, who can partake in helping to lead music, in which case that might become a full-time position. So as you are aware of people like that, be they in the church or outside the church, we welcome your feedback, but know that this is a position of high priority, and so it will be under no small amount of scrutiny before such a person is accepted into the position. So in the name of continuity and stability, I am currently aiming to stay personally invested in the youth group until such a replacement is found. And I'm also hoping to help me carry the responsibility of full-time pastoring while still investing in our students, that we'll be able to build a large team, larger than we have now, of youth sponsors and helpers, volunteers, who will help me in the areas that I've already historically been falling short. So looking for a team of youth sponsors and volunteers who will help to disciple the youth relationally. We are female dominant in the youth group as far as our students go, and so certainly we're looking for willing and able female youth sponsors. We're looking for people to help with youth nights and small groups and programs. And this is a big one, helping to organize activities, outings, and service projects. If you were to ask the youth how many service projects, outings, and activities has Josh promised, the list would be, it would go on and on and on. How many have we actually carried out? You could probably count on two hands. So if not one hand, Rose, I see you. So I hope that with enough, and this is again in the lines of every member ministry, with enough willing hands and invested souls, we can turn the youth program into something activity and outreach-wise that it has not been, that we can develop a more robust program while I continue to teach until we find a new youth minister. So I, by the grace of God, have been able to put together a fairly robust curriculum over the last 8 years, one that the majority of our youth group, especially those incoming, have not been exposed to yet. This includes Christian living, apologetics, doctrine, and hermeneutics, and so on and so forth. So my goal, that I think will not require that much work if I have enough people around me, is to help maintain that continuity and stability by being a steady presence in the youth group as I transition into full-time pastoring. Still be teaching on Wednesday nights, still be maintaining that relationship with the youth, something that is very precious and valuable to me. And we'll be looking to others to help me flush out the rest of the program. I'd be happy to take any questions on that after this meeting. But we'll certainly ask for prayer for wisdom in the transition, for wisdom and discernment in the right future youth pastor or youth minister, and also for you guys who think, boy, I have free Wednesday evenings, I have some free time where I could help plan outreaches and ways to pump more life into the youth ministry program, I would invite you to pray and consider being a part of that as well. I suppose I've said enough. Okay. Any questions I could field right now? Otherwise, you can stew on it for a bit and come back to me. Okay. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening.
Okay, thanks, Josh. All right. The next update has to do with Sunday school teachers, but I don't know how many we have in here. How many do we have? Okay, good. All right, I'll go ahead and do this update. So I need to follow up with the teachers because you've been kind of left hanging here, and I've not had anything firmly established yet to report on, but we're getting close. And even if you're not a Sunday school teacher, this update should prove helpful as it does help reflect some of our philosophies here, not to mention that many of you have children in the Sunday school program. So I met with the teachers of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John a couple months ago or so to discuss the plan of getting them all on board to read through Wayne Grudem's book on systematic theology. I was going to bring one out here, and I didn't, but it's about like this thick, you know, it's like 4 inches thick. And it looks intimidating, but I assured them that we would go through it slowly and that it would not be as tough as it might seem. Our intent in all this, of course, is to help equip our teachers. We expect teachers in our public schools, for instance, to have formal training to know what they're talking about. And so the church should expect no less when it comes to matters that are more significant from the viewpoint of eternity than algebra and geography. However, anything we as a church come up with has to be not just helpful, but also manageable. And this is where the challenge comes in to try to balance that. Now, manageable might not mean easy, but at the same time, it shouldn't be overly burdensome. And we often get pushback from both sides of the spectrum. Some are frustrated that the requirements are too little and that they are not adequately enforced. Others complain that what we ask is too much. So, you know, there's always going to be some trade-off in this, and anything we come up with, we just have to accept there's going to be less than ideal, much less perfect, but we'll do the best we can. So based on feedback from the last meeting, we went back to the drawing board looking for a way to make this ongoing learning process that we want to see manageable, and I think that we are close to that. We drafted something up that we recently presented to a focus group here in the church, most of whom have children at home and who themselves see the value of ongoing learning, and we should hear back from them pretty soon on any suggestions that they might want to offer to our plan. So there will be more to say about all this and about Grudem's theology book once we get something firmly in place, but I just wanted to follow up to let you know that we're working on this, and I apologize for leaving you hanging all this time. All right, next item is the affirmation forms. And this also needs a lot of time, but I'm going to try to keep this brief. The purpose behind the affirmation form is to gauge from the congregation the level of support a current sitting elder has in retaining his role for the next year. So there's been a lot of discussion over this over the time, but because we ask our members to base their evaluation on scriptural qualifications of an elder, as opposed to, well, he's such a nice guy, or he's been at the church for 30 years, you know, those sorts of things. Because we ask for people to evaluate on scriptural qualifications, there's sometimes been a little bit of confusion about actually what's going on. And so something as simple as, for example, I don't find him to be very hospitable, or I don't think he is able to teach, could mean I like to see him do better, or it could mean he should not be an elder. And when we think of accusations, we tend to think of the big stuff, like, you know, stealing money from the church or having an affair, getting into a fight at the local bar, you know, that kind of stuff. But if an accusation, then Paul's very clear we're not to entertain it unless there are two witnesses. But if on the form someone says that one of the elders doesn't exercise self-control because he's a glutton, eats too much, well, is that a sin? Is that an accusation? And on we go. And this is one of the reasons we have asked for names. We want to follow up with those who make such comments because we just need more information. We need to know what the issue is, how serious it really is. And because, however, we require names for the forum, a lot of people don't participate or don't give us honest feedback. And we'd like to find a way that we'd get more people to participate. So to make a long story short, we tried to rework the whole form this year. We had several different versions of it. And while we made some headway, we don't have anything ready to replace what we've been doing. We're still working on it, but we might for next year. We're hoping to. So members can expect to get the standard affirmation form sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And regarding accusations, as I saw one of the elders get into a road rage incident, something like that, don't wait for the affirmation form. Situations like that should be addressed immediately. Okay. For that matter, really, the affirmation form isn't really intended for any kind of accusation. Again, it's to measure the level of support the congregation has in seeing a sitting elder retain his role for another year. All right, so I was also asked to talk about some of the discussion that we have had in our meetings regarding the office of deacon. We've not had a lot of discussion about that, but some, and it's something that Josh himself is eager to explore. So you'll probably be hearing more about this at some point. So just a couple comments here. Currently, just to clarify, we do have deacons in our church. We just don't call them that or recognize it as an official office. The word simply means servant. And so anyone who serves the church in an official capacity, whatever it might be, whether teaching Sunday school or serving on the worship band or sharing thoughts on a congregational reading or running the women's ministry or being a youth group sponsor, whatever it might be, fill in the blank, they need to meet the qualifications of a deacon or deaconess in 1 Timothy 2. But there is some discussion going on here about actually establishing an office of deacon and or deaconess in our church. And this change might be in the works, and I might get into that a little bit more next month during those sermons on the Every Member Ministry, because that would be a good time for that. But this is just something that's kind of, we're early in those discussions, and it's something you'll probably be hearing more about, especially as Josh, something he's pretty passionate about, and I expect that there'll be something he'll want to be talking to you about more. Okay, so with that in mind, it's quarter after, we're right on time. Let's take about a 10-minute break, and we will resume here, and I would think that we'll have everything wrapped up by a quarter till, and the teachers, if you go back to see this, where the kids are at, the teachers have the option of either staying and teaching the kids or bringing them back, and we'll resume here in about 5 or 10 minutes.